Hello, I'm Kirsty Young, and this is a download from the Desert Island Discs archive. This edition may be slightly different from what was actually broadcast, but it's the only version we have. It comes from the British Library's radio collection. It was archived without the music, so although the castaways' choices are introduced, they're not part of this recording. Full details can be found on the Castaways page on the Desert Island Discs website. The programme was originally broadcast in 1978. And the presenter was Roy Plumley.
Our castaway this week is the chairman of the National Federation of Women's Institutes, Mrs. Patricia Batty Shaw. Are you especially fond of music?
Not especially. I didn't realise until I was beginning to look at these records that music really did mean very much in my life, but I realised, looking back, that most things that have happened to me in some way have got some sort of musical connection.
Have you any musical skill? Do you play an instrument?
I used to be able to play carols and nursery rhymes on the piano, but my daughter's now so much better than me that I've given up.
Did you have any plan in choosing your records? Are you looking back?
Mainly looking back. Mm-hmm. Very largely, they are records that remind me of family events. I've always been very lucky in having a very happy family life, and we've done so many things together as a family that I think these are basically what they would remind me of.
Where do we start? What's the first disc?
Well, thinking of family, the first one that I'd like to hear as a sentimental mother is Thank Heaven for Little Girls from Gigi, sung by Maurice Chevalier.
And you have one little girl?
I have one little girl, and she's got those appealing eyes that are sung about in the record.
But she's not so little now.
Afraid not, no, rather grown up now.
Maurice Chevalier and the soundtrack of Gigi. When you were a schoolgirl, what did you want to be?
I would like to have been clever enough to have been a doctor, because my father was a doctor. Sadly, I was not very good at maths and Latin, and so decided towards the end of my school life that I would like to try and be a social worker. In those days, they were called Lady Almoners. They're now medical social workers. Mm. Lady Almoner always sounded rather grand, and I always remember the time when I was at Guy's Hospital when a kind patient bought me a present and said, "Here you are, this Lady Almoner is a box of chocolates for you, and here is a cigar for Lord Almoner," which was really a rather sweet offer.
That's very nice. It was, in fact, at the hospital that you met your husband?
At Guy's Hospital,
at
yes.
Guy's. You had previously been to the University of Southampton to read social studies.
Yes, I was at the University of Southampton, where I did a social science certificate for 2 years, and then in those days you went for another year to do your practical work. This I did under the Institute of Almoners, and indeed went to St Thomas's Hospital and to Oxford and to Liverpool to do my practical training.
How long were you a Lady Almoner?
Well, after all that effort, I was only a Lady Almoner for 1 year because I happened to meet my husband during
Lord
that
Almoner.
Time. Yeah, exactly, yes.
And where did you go after that?
For a brief period of time, we lived in Kent, and then we moved up to Norfolk.
You did start, I know, by having a house in the Cathedral Close in Norwich.
Yes, indeed we did. A lovely old house, with the kitchen right down at the bottom, the dining room up the next flight of stairs, the drawing room up the next, and the bedroom and bathroom up the next.
Very handy to run.
Very easy, compensated by the fact that you looked out and saw the beautiful spire of Norwich Cathedral when you were doing the washing up.
And now where do you live?
I now live in a little village about 8 miles west of Norwich called Barford.
And it's a 17th century house, I believe.
Yes, perhaps even a little earlier than that. It's wattle and daub and beams. And when we first moved in, it was all black paint and green paint, and we spent many happy months, if not years, scraping the beams so that they were in their natural state. And they look very nice now, I think.
Perhaps it's very rewarding to bring a house back to life like that.
Oh, it is. It's one of the things, our hobbies, that we've enjoyed together over the years. Very hard work, but very rewarding, as you say, when you finally finish. The trouble is, of course, you never do finally finish.
What's your second record?
Well, my second record is a reminder of my university days at Southampton. Every year we had what was called a rag week, where the money raised by various different means went to different charities. And one of the things that I enjoyed very much was taking part in an old-time music hall, which always happened at the end of Southampton Pier. I don't know if it's still there now, but it was great fun. No work was done for a week before or a week after. And to remind me of those days and the companionship and friendship that I had amongst my fellow students then, I would very much like to hear Get Out and Get Under.
Get Out and Get Under, sung by Gerald Kirby. Now, you do a lot of social work in East Anglia. You're a Justice of the Peace, and you're a member of the Council of the University of East Anglia, and also on a working party for that most fascinating of subjects, local history.
Yes, Lord Blake's committee, appointed by the National Council of Social Service to investigate the pattern and working of local history and those interested in it throughout the country. We are still taking evidence and making deliberations, so that I can't really say very much at the moment, but it has been, and I'm sure is going to be, a very fascinating experience, hoping to finish by the end of this year.
When did the Women's Institute come into your life?
It came into my life when I moved out to live in Barford and Ramplingham, my home village, in about 1959. And I was busily scraping the beams in my new home when someone asked if I'd go down and join the Institute. And as I knew no one in the village, I thought this would be a very good way of meeting people and making friends.
Well, I gather when you joined the Barford and Ramplingham Institute, they were having rather a rough time. In fact, they were talking of closing.
Yes, they were. It was very sad. I thought, now at last I'm going to make friends, and I go down and find that they were all going to close. And you know what it's like when you open your mouth and say something. I said, oh dear, what a pity. Can't we try a little longer? And probably found myself made their new on sec. Which was great fun, hard work, and we've been flourishing on and off ever since.
How many branches does the Women's Institute have?
Throughout England and Wales and the Channel Islands and in the Isle of Man, we have about 9,300 odd institutes.
That's a lot, isn't it?
It is. They're spread all over the country.
Pretty well every town and village, I suppose.
Not quite, but nearly every area is covered. I think we now, I would only give an approximate figure because, of course, they go up and down, but we have about 400,000 members altogether, mm-hmm. or just a little over, possibly.
Yes. Quick mathematics, an average of about, well, roughly 50 members a branch.
Yes, I'm sure your mathematics is much better than mine. But, so of course, the branches vary in sizes. You will find some with only 25 members and some with 150. Depending on the size of the community in which they are working.
Basic question, what does it cost to join?
The subscription for 1978-1979 is going to be £1.75.
That's a more quick mathematics. That only works out at about 3 or 4 pence a week. You can't grumble at that.
No, I don't think you can.
Record number three.
Well, on my desert island, I think that I would be thinking sometimes of the holidays that I had spent with my family, and perhaps rather wistfully thinking of the cooler climes in the Northern Hemisphere. I presume my desert island is going to be a lovely sandy one and rather full of sun.
Of course.
So I think I'd like to be reminded of Fingal's Cave, because we had the most wonderful holiday many years ago now up the west coast of Scotland. And it was a beautiful day with a lovely cool wind, and we went in a little boat and looked at Fingal's Cave. And I'd like this music to remind me of that day.
The opening of Mendelssohn's Fingal's Cave, Sir Malcolm Sargent conducting the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. Now, one's first impression when thinking of women's institutes is a meeting in the village hall to discuss jam-making or something. Is it indeed a country women's organisation?
Oh, very definitely. We have got a difficulty in the sense that country and urban areas The edges have become very blurred, but basically, definitely, still a country women's organisation.
And there's a lot more to it, of course, than jam making. There is now a Women's Institute College of Home Economics and that sort of thing.
We've had our college just outside Oxford, called Denman College, named after our first national chairman, for now 30 years. We're celebrating its 30th birthday this year. And to celebrate it, we are indeed building on a new part for home economics instruction. But of course, that isn't the only thing that we do at Denman, nor is it the only thing that we do in our own institutes or in the counties. At Denman College, you can have a course on Jane Austen or car maintenance, as well as any of the cooking and craft courses that you would expect to have. And just as you will find the same thing happens in institutes, you will have all sorts of different lectures and courses, as well as the traditional ones that you always think about when you think of the WI.
When did the WI start?
In 1917-18.
Whose idea was it?
The idea originally came over from Canada. There was a Mrs. Hoodless there who sadly lost her baby and indeed another child because she didn't understand about proper nutrition and care of children. And she got a group of women together, and together they learnt how to look after their families. Now, this idea spread over from Canada to England in the year that I've mentioned. And basically it is, of course, just the same now. We are there to learn how to look after our families and to improve conditions in rural life.
It has a rather middle-aged image. Are there age limits?
There's no age limit. Each institute decides on their own what the lower age limit should be. Sometimes it's 16, perhaps it might be 17. But, of course, we do vary in age. One of the great things, I think, when you talk about the WI, is its variety, not only in the things it does, but in the people who are members. And the variety of ages and backgrounds and interests, I think, is perhaps where our strength does lie.
A lot of music and drama, traditionally.
Yes,
and
yes.
And festivals at the end of it?
Sometimes. The next national event, as we call it, will be in 1980, which will be drama and speech and music.
And now there's a publishing scheme, I gather.
We've always published our own leaflets, but now we are just branching out slightly and have established a two-way system, one internal publications and the other our own WI Books Limited, where we are in partnership with a publisher and a consultant to produce beautiful books written very largely by members that will be on sale to the public.
I suppose, above all, the WI is a big pressure group for all problems with particular interest for women.
Yes, I think in our last history of Jam and Jerusalem, we were called one of the largest or third largest trades union. I don't really like that very much, because we're not. But there are a lot of us who perhaps don't belong to a trades union or a professional group of any sort, and we still like to feel that our voice is heard in some way. And this, of course, we can do through the WI, whether it be at our own local council meetings in the county or our great big national annual general meeting at the Albert Hall, as we have in June.
I think record number four now.
One of the best holidays that we used to have was a skiing holiday in Austria, and I would very much like to be reminded of some of those very happy, unsophisticated evenings that we had after a busy day skiing, very exhausted, and I'd like to hear some Austrian folk music, particularly the Nappen dance, which is, you know, the one where you hit your bottom and your leather hosen very hard and make a lovely noise.
A great slapping of thighs in the Tyrolean Knappen tanz. What's the structure of the Women's Institute? Headquarters, of course, in London, inevitably.
Yes, yes.
And then what? Local branches, and then county federations, and then national executive on top.
That's right, yes. So three-tier structure, really.
Yes, all yes. Sort of democratic coming up from the rank and file.
We're very democratic and do everything by secret ballot, which I think is terribly important. Perhaps sometimes it's a bit cumbersome, but it is important that this should be done.
So you started as an ordinary member of a village group, were very quickly co-opted into being on SEC, and then what was your next step?
Well, at that time, I'd got a small daughter and was rather tied to the family, so most of my early days were devoted to the local institute, which I loved very much. You know, I'm still an ordinary member. You don't change just because you go and do other things. And I don't know really what ordinary is. But then after a few years looking after the family, I got co-opted onto the county and did work within the county area. And then finally, nationally, where I got elected and have done various jobs on the National Executive over the last, I think it is, 9 years.
And in June last year, you were elected chairman. None of that nonsense about chairperson, I'm happy to notice.
No, no, indeed not. We've always been a chairman, and a chairman we shall remain.
So now you're in your second year as chairman.
Yes.
In London, is there a paid office staff to back you up?
There is, in Victoria. They are there to carry out the policy that is decided by the members.
Now, the whole thing began in Canada, you see. How international is the WI?
International work has always been written into our constitution, because we do think that even though we are working within our own local communities, it is very important for us to be aware of what is going on outside our own country.
So there are women's institutes all over the place in other countries?
There are indeed, apart from Canada, Rhodesia and America, Australia. Most of the European countries have the equivalent. They might not be called women's institutes, but they do the same job. And we all band together or are associated together through an international organisation called the Associated Country Women of the World. Now, they have about 8 million members from about roughly 76 different countries.
That is a formidable pressure group, isn't it?
It is indeed.
on WI Business, you've travelled quite a great deal.
I have been fortunate. I've represented the WI at the various conferences for the Associated Country Women of the World. Very hard work, but very interesting and very stimulating to meet women from other countries. It's interesting, really, because although we don't all speak the same language, as women, when we meet together, I think we find that we have got the same problems and concern for the future welfare of our families and homes and our country.
We've got to record number 5.
When my daughter was about 7, we went, and we were very lucky, to be able to go to the Salzburg Festival. And this was the most moving and wonderful experience for us all. And one of the greatest things that I shall always remember is sitting in Mozart's house, in the very room where he himself had given a concert, and listening to the piano sonata number 11.
The beginning of Mozart's Piano Sonata No. 11, Kirchel 331, and it was played by Conrad Hansen on a Mozart piano. The event which always gets considerable press coverage is the big annual conference, which you did mention briefly, at the Albert Hall. Always that same press picture of ladies eating their lunches on the steps of the Albert Memorial.
Yes.
Now, the Albert Hall doesn't hold 9,000 people, I don't think, so you can't have someone from every branch.
No, we don't. Sadly, we have to have what we call a linking system. In other words, two institutes get together, and alternate years, one goes from one institute, and then the next year another goes from another.
You have a tremendous amount of business to get through in your one day a year. The chairman has to be pretty ruthless, I gather.
It takes a lot of preparation, I might tell you, and we have a very carefully worked out timed agenda, which we try to keep to. It isn't always very easy.
So to the minute. And somebody's got 3 minutes to make a point, and if she hasn't finished, then she's more or less suppressed.
Well, not quite. Just sort of it's indicated to her that it is time she stopped. Shall we put it like that?
Record number 6.
We are very lucky in Norfolk to have a lot of musical festivals, and indeed we have a lot of musical festivals in the whole of East Anglia. And I shall always remember the first time I heard and saw Britain's Noise Flood in Orford Church. The wonderful way in which the children sang and moved and joined in will always be in my memory.
the opening of Benjamin Britten's Noyes Flood, recorded actually in Orford Church, Suffolk. Now, having absorbed all the knowledge of practical housekeeping that you must have absorbed in 19 years or whatever it is with the Women's Institute, you should make a very efficient castaway.
Well, not only am I very efficient as a WI member, but of course I was a girl guide.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Oh, the whole thing's made. Would your handicrafts extend to building a hut, do you think?
I'd have a jolly good go.
And you can cultivate, you're a gardener.
Yes, indeed.
Cooking, of course, you know about.
Yes.
Now, you're a very well organised lady. There's a story that when you went away to Australia for 3 weeks on institute business, you made family meals for the whole period, ready cooked and in the freezer, so that they just had to take them out and warm them up.
Indeed I did. You know, that's not very difficult. A lot of women have to do that, particularly women who go out to work regularly.
For 3 weeks?
Well, of course, the wretched thing was that when I came home, they hadn't eaten half of them because kind friends invited them out to so many meals. I think there's one there still now.
Would you try to escape?
Oh, never. I could not bear the thought of having to trust myself in a boat that I'd made myself. And I'd rather keep my feet very firmly on the ground and trust that my family would miss me after a little while and come and look for me.
Let's have another record.
Just for pure pleasure, because I like it, I would like to have with me the Italian Concerto, Bach.
The opening of Bach's Concerto in the Italian style in F major, played by Alicia de la Rocha. Well, now we come to your last record. Are we having Jerusalem?
Well, you know, somehow the WI has been so much part of my life for so long that I don't think I need to have any practical reminder about it. We're not going to have Jerusalem.
Incidentally, why was that chosen as the WI anthem? It does seem a little remote.
Many years ago, when the movement first started, they wanted to have some form of song that you could sing together at the beginning of a meeting. And a competition was held. And really, there were so many peculiar songs sent in, the final straw being when Lady Denman opened an envelope and read in front of her, "We are an earnest band of women," that she decided that it would be very much better to have a well-known song, and they selected Jerusalem. Because it is very rousing, you know, when you hear it sung well, particularly
yes.
At the Albert Hall.
Right, well, we'll take it as sung on this occasion and come to your last record. What is it?
When we have the conferences in different parts of the world, we always have what I find a most moving thing at the end of a conference called the Interfaith Service. Here we have a mixture of Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Jews, and we always sing to the tune of Finlandia by Sibelius, the most moving final hymn. And I would like to have this with me on my desert island to give me pleasure because the music is so lovely and to remind me of my many friends throughout the world that I have made by being a WI member.
We haven't the vocal version, but here is the orchestral tune that you were talking about. Finlandia by Sibelius, played by the Halle Orchestra, conducted by Sir John Barbey Rolley. If you could take just one of your 8 records, which would you choose?
The last one.
Finlandia.
Yes.
And you're allowed to take one luxury to the island with you?
Well, being a practical lady, I would like to take, if I may, a selection of my herbs from the garden. They'd give me something to do, they'd put some taste into my food, they'd help me if I was ill, and they'd give me a lovely scent at night.
That's a very sensible choice. And one book, apart from that small list of the Bible, Shakespeare, and big encyclopedias?
Kenneth Clark's Civilization. It would remind me of all the lovely places I had visited over the years.
Right. And thank you, Mrs. Bertie Shaw, for letting us hear your Desert Island disc.
Thank you. I very much enjoyed it.
Goodbye, everyone.